Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Richard Polinelli, only on LA Talk Radio.
By Rick Gilman, the official new theme song of the Writer's Block here on LA Talk Radio. And if you have listened to our show in the past, you already figured out these are not the dulcet tones of Jim Christina coming to you tonight. Jim is in the shop for a quick repair. Dr. Victor von Frankenstein says he'll be out soon, probably next week. So Jim, get better. In the meantime, we have activated the emergency holographic guest host program. I'm Richard Polinelli. I'm in the captain's seat, and don't worry, I have everything under control, which was, ironically enough, the last words Captain Smith heard as he walked off the bridge of the Titanic, right? But unlike the good captain, I have a co-pilot on board, and that would be Bobby Jean Bell. Miss Bobby Jean, how are you doing this evening?
I'm good, Richard. I'm good. Happy to be here as always. I think this is show 323, if I've counted them up right.
Yeah.
Pretty amazing.
Yep, we are in the 300s and going strong. So we're number 323. I think is going to be just as good as everyone that's come before because we've got a great guest tonight. But before we get to her, I do want to point out if you want to call into the show and talk to our guest or talk to Bobby Jean or for whatever reason, talk to me. The phone number to call is 323-203-0815. And I think I got that right because Bobby Jean's not waving at me. So give us a call if you want to talk to our guest. Real quick, we do have some news we want to touch on. A couple of releases. On Tuesday, a book written by Gibson Michaels titled Eerie was released. And we talked about that book on the show, I want to say about 3 years ago. And, the quick story is that Mike passed away while he was working on this book. Several of us have gotten together and we have finished it and got it out. And it is officially out now. It's on Amazon in paperback and ebook. And if you're into sci-fi fantasy, this was an amazing story that he put together. And I'm glad we were able to get it out there. It's definitely a recommended read. Tomorrow, Tuscany Bay Books, which is a sponsor of this show, has a book coming out called Exploring Infinity. And that is the sequel to Escaping Infinity. And it's a different type of sequel in that the author who wrote the first one didn't write all of the second one. It's a collection of short stories that deal with what's going on in the hotel during Escaping Infinity. There's some people from history, some fictional characters that will pop up. Sherlock Holmes is one. What actually happened with the legend of Sleepy Hollow will be answered. And the origins of the Tales of the Arabian Nights will also be addressed. It's an interesting collection. I was not expecting the stories I got, but after I read them, I think it's going to be a good one. My story in it sets up the actual sequel, which is coming out next year. So look for that tomorrow. It should be going live here in a couple of hours. And also one more thing, Tuscany Bay Books has several eBooks that are on sale on Amazon for the rest of the month, 99 cents. It includes Exploring Infinity, Escaping Infinity, The Last Lonely Trail, which Jim and I wrote, Into the Night by Caroline Giamanco, who's been on the show. Several others. I could probably eat up the time just listening to them, and so I'm not going to because we have a guest that we need to get to. So let's do that. She currently resides in Utah with her hubby, three kids, and dog Jack Wyatt Wolverine. I love that name. She's an advocate for scoliosis and child abuse awareness, a Nancy Drew enthusiast, and a cyborg. I'm going to find out about this cyborg thing. Teaching creative writing classes and workshops is one of her favorite things to do. When she's not having long conversations with her characters and creating stories, she's hosting the Enlightenment podcast, reading, playing the piano, or solving a mystery. So let us welcome to the show debut author Lori Schoenfeld. Welcome, Lori.
Hello, hello, Richard and Bobby. So excited to be here with both of you this evening.
Well, we are happy to have you. And it's always a pleasure and a thrill to have a brand new author on, because this is a new voice we haven't heard, and a new perspective. And they always seem to bring these amazing new stories that we can dive into. And yours is certainly not an exception. So I'm going to let Bobby Jean jump in, because I know she has a whole bunch of questions for you about this one. And it's the title. I guess I should mention the title. The title is Little Owl. So take it away, Bobby.
Well, welcome, Lori, and congratulations, because this book has only been out like 9 days. It launched on August 31st, if I've got the date right. And so it's a debut novel. Is it really 11? Was it 11 years in the making?
It was 11 years in the
11
making.
11 years. So that's a long maternity period. So congratulations. I have two first questions. And really, the first one is, so how are you feeling now that it's out there in the world? How have these 9 days been for you?
A blend of terrified that now I'm not holding on to something I've held on to for 11 years, and also very excited to just let it do its own thing and create a completely different story and characters.
Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about, rather than us talk about, you know, what we've read so far, let us have you tell us about Little Owl, and also where the title comes from, if you could include that.
Yes. Little Owl, the main character is Adeline Rushner, and she is a mother with two little girls who wants to create consistency and safety within her home. But she is spiraling from PTSD and childhood trauma and is not quite sure how to be able to establish being the woman and mother she wants to be when she feels like she is still drowning in her own darkness and in her own trauma. And so when her daughters go missing and then they're pronounced dead, she cannot face the fact that that is her reality, and takes this road of trying to figure out what happened to the Rushner girls. And when she goes down this road, she then begins facing that PTSD and those inner demons that she had not allowed herself to face prior to this, and starts seeing some of the lies that she's told herself, but also the lies that those around her have told her as well, as she's trying to untangle this web of what happened to her girls.
And what a web it is. I found myself as a reader, and I was captivated from page one, line one. I did find myself sometimes having to go back, because there'd be a very important, what I felt like, oh, that's not a clue necessarily, but this is an important piece of information. And did I already have a reference to that, that somehow I need to connect them, because this is not the yellow brick road we're going down. This is quite an exciting road with twists and turns, and I didn't really want to lose any links as you, the author, unveil this story. There's not a lot of characters. There's a lot of pages, but it's actually a very small cast of characters. And they all, we have several different points of view also, and it seemed as though everybody is fighting demons of some kind, except maybe the little girls, although Lenora knows somebody's been watching them, and she's got some concerns. You want to talk a little bit maybe about, you just told us a little bit about Adeline, but maybe her husband Cash and Seth or Sam, just a little bit. We don't want to do any spoiler alerts, but maybe tell us about these folks.
Yeah, Cash, her husband, has grown up in foster homes. His upbringing is he doesn't have a family and a home either, and he's trying to create and establish what that looks like for him. But because he's a foster child, he approaches Adeline and those around him very differently because he has abandonment issues. That's one of his internal demons. Sam ends up being Adeline's childhood friend who really wants to be more than that. And his web is he ends up getting tied into codependency and wanting to continue to save Adeline and be this shield and this anchor for her rather than addressing some of his own identity pieces within himself. Each one of these characters just have their own trauma of things that each of us individually are going through. And I really wanted to take a snippet of not only what each individual character is seeing, but what everyone around them is seeing as well, as they're all kind of spiraling in and of themselves that they can't see, but those around them can.
Yeah. It's, I guess we call it a psychological thriller. It has haunted me and followed me and tormented me. And so you did a good job. I really liked Adeline a lot and I really felt for her. And I thought as a reader, the first few pages, her world is really wonderful and sunny and exciting. And the one elder daughter's birthday is around the corner, and Cash is a really loving husband, except he likes to ask her if she's taken her pills. That seems to be a common refrain with Cash. And then, of course, the girls are suddenly missing. And the world goes upside down. And I wondered if you, as the author, is there maybe too intimate a question to ask you, but I felt often this was so raw and authentic and real in the writing that there had to be a part of you coming through your fingers and out onto the page. Is that true?
They're very much so. Each one of these characters have a piece of me in them that are things that I wanted to share and talk about that were not the sunny parts, that were the very real moments that I didn't feel like I could really express and share, even with my closest friends. Mm-hmm. And so I put them on paper and wrote them into my characters, not only for them to try to find the answers for themselves, but for me to also understand those pieces of myself and those experiences that I was going through that were dark and scary, that weren't sunshiny and they weren't happy, but that I needed to feel and I needed to understand.
Mm-hmm. I know that you you talk about PTSD in some of the interviews and such that I've read. It's not really a term that comes up in the book so much. But, you know, I think of PTSD as we often do with first responders and folks coming back from military careers and on. I hadn't really thought about how, you know, we all may be suffering from some version of it. And I thought that was a really important piece for you to bring out, because we might not realize ourselves that this is a fear, this is a world we could find ourselves in. Mm-hmm. So thank you for being so validating and almost sort of raw on the pages. I think it's really an eye opener. I know Richard is, I'm looking at the time. So I'm going to let Richard take it away for a moment here.
Yeah, we got to pay the bills. It's time to pay a bill. This is the Writer's Block on LA Talk Radio. We are talking with Lori Schoenfeld, and we are going to take a one-minute break as we hear a little bit about LA Talk Radio.
Hi, Jim Christina here for LA Talk Radio. You know, it seems everyone has a podcast these days. So how about you do this? How about you start your very own radio show that goes out live worldwide for nary a pittance? If you think you have an idea that would translate to a radio talk format, then stop waiting. Go to www.latalkradio.com. Click on the link that says Become a Host. Follow the easy instructions, and before you know it, you'll be the on-air live host of your very own talk show on LA Talk Radio. We have 50-minute slots available every day, including Sundays, so don't be shy. Join the many that have started their careers on the air. Join the hosts on LA Talk Radio at www.latalkradio.com.
You know, the problem with a brand new commercial spot is I had no idea if we were close to the end until it was over. We are back here on the Writer's Block again with Lori Schoenfeld. And if you want to call and ask her a question or two, we would love to hear from you. And I'm sure she would as well. The phone number is 323-203-0815. Give us a call and we will get you on, and we'll see what you have to say, and we'll see what Lori comes up with. But in the meantime, I did want to talk to you about the early in the book. So this isn't much of a spoiler, I don't think. You write the death of two young children, and I was wondering, because is it hard to write about children that way when they're going to be suffering, when they are going to die? Is that difficult for you as a writer to do that?
Yes. And it's funny, is the first four chapters were not the first four for the 10 and a half years. They mm-hmm. were a very different beginning. And it's because I really didn't want to go there. I knew that this is what needed to be the beginning of the story. I have three little children of my own. And so that was like the last space that I wanted to take it, because it is so raw and emotional as a mom to even think about what that would feel and look like and be in. And so at the very ending, we're talking February, I finally sat down and did this edit and just sat with a forensic specialist and a medical examiner. And I was like, okay, I need to make sure that I'm doing this accurate, that I'm doing this justice. And we're just going to take 2 weeks to be upset, cry, write it out, and be as raw as possible. And then we've got to be done.
Yeah. Have you gotten any feedback from readers yet? Because I know in The Last Lonely Trail, there's a little girl who dies, I think, in the first chapter. And then in Escaping Infinity, I have a little girl who dies. And in both instances, the deaths are tragic and they're horrific. But they also served a purpose to drive the story forward, to get the characters moving in a direction they had to for the story. But I had so many people who would come up to me and go, what do you got against kids? You're always doing this to kids. What's wrong with you? Have you gotten any kind of feedback from like that yet? Or is it still a little too early?
Not yet. I guess it's still pretty fresh. So,
okay. Well, hopefully you won't get it like I did, because they're like, what are you, some kind of child killer? I'm like, what me? Yeah, go ahead, Bobby.
Well, I just wanted to say, as I think back over reading that, even though we're told that they have died, Adeline doesn't believe it. And I, as a reader, just decided, we're going to go down this road together, and I'm going to go with her, and I'm going to not believe it either. And the one of the things, though, that I appreciated is we see a lot of TV shows where kids are abducted, or there's going to be a ransom, or, the parents realize the child's missing. And on film, we can see their distress or in the dialogue. But I felt her stomach. I felt temperatures rise. I really felt more closely what it would be like to actually live through that. And again, that was something I appreciated, because it brought texture and real emotion. I'm sure the next time I see a CSI or something where, a child is abducted, I will really be able to relate even better to the characters, because you really gave it to us. And I can't think that was easy writing.
Thank you, Bobby. No, it wasn't easy writing at all.
Yeah, and I think the trick is also knowing how much to put down on paper, how much is too much, and getting that balance to where you get the shock and the horror, but you don't get almost to where it's become like this super R-rated film that, just a slasher. You don't want that.
We didn't need it. She writes it horrifically enough that we can use our imagination.
It's hard to find that balance to not go too far, but to go far enough.
Yes, because I wanted to visually, for the reader, have you feel and be in the experience enough where you're right along with Adeline, really getting the gist of what she's feeling and what that would look like. Mm-hmm. But not to the point where you are, I don't want to say more triggered with PTSD. There is definitely a level where you can toss it up and do more graphic scenes. For me, I decided to choose with my craft to stick with the emotional aspect of what she was feeling instead of giving more descriptive details on, you know, gore and things of that nature. And that was just a personal preference that I chose to take.
Well, I think it was the right choice. I mean, I'm in the camp of you give the reader just enough and you let their imagination fill in the rest of it, because it makes them connect to it more personally when it's coming from that area. And I thought you did a really good job of striking that balance and getting us to realize just how terrible this must have been. And then what the parents are going through. I mean, you gave us a really good look at any parent's nightmare, and they're living it. So it was really well done. Now, this family you created, this family tree of Adelines, especially. Where did these people come from?
Where did they come from?
Because you have to have, I mean, you either know somebody or you've got this in your family tree.
Yes, I have definitely grown up with a few of these characters in my family tree. And that was one of the investigation pieces. Even as a little girl, I remember thinking, I see these people, I love these people, but what in the world is going on? And so at a very young age, that's when I wanted to do research. I was very interested in psychology and people, of trying to understand what could possibly create someone to turn into the worst possible version of themselves, not only for themselves, but then every action that they're taking is also affecting all of those people around them. And we're continuing to bring that into our family tree, because there's so many unhealed instances of abuse and different pieces of trauma where we just begin to think that that's normal. And then we take that into our own family and just integrate that into another family tree. And so I really wanted to investigate that piece within Adeline, of moving away from that separation, but also trying to find those answers of why am I being treated this way? What happened to my daughters? Why am I showing up this way? But then also blaming it on other people, which is another part that she has to address in multiple areas in the story. But yeah, the characters are very, very real from my own personal experience.
That's probably common for all of us. I mean, we all draw from the people we've met, the people we grew up with, people we would much rather have not encountered. But you pick up some of the things that they did, and you find in certain books that, hey, this is a perfect time to put that person in there. And in some cases, you can do something to that person that you didn't get to do to the other person. And it's very therapeutic, I found, every once in a while. So, I was reading, especially as we kind of get into Adeline's mom and her grandmother, I was like, man, there are real people that these are based on, because as in-depth as they are, you had a lot of history on these two, and just the way you kind of gave it to us as we went through the book. I mean, we got what we needed when we needed to know it. Mm-hmm. And I think it was really well crafted.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Did the character speak to you and take over, or were you able to control them, or did they say, no, I need to be in the closet now, or whatever, or whatever?
For about 6 years of that 11 years, Bobby, I plotted. I was a plotter, and I had bullet points, and we were going this very specific direction. And then specifically Adeline was the first one where I would get ideas of places that we needed to go, which is not what I would have chosen for her, because you love your characters, you know, you get really connected to them. But I could also see why she chose to go in the direction and path that she decided to go. And so I started learning how to let go of the control aspect of the story and let the characters go where they needed to go on their own journey.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Richard.
No, you're good.
Well, there are lots of little details. In the beginning, we have the term kissaroo, which is so sweet, where the mom takes a little bite out of the sandwich before she gives it to the girls, and other little things that then show up later. And I was curious, as the writer, do you put those in the beginning, and then you say to yourself, oh, this would be a good place to bring that back again? Or after your first read through, you say, you know, I should put something here because I think I need it again later on. Does that make sense?
Yeah, a little bit of both. So with Kissaroo, that is something that actually my oldest daughter, for a long time when she was 4, she would not eat her food unless I took a bite out of her sandwich. And it was such a cute, like, little connection that I had with my daughter, that as I was writing this, it was just a natural thing. I wanted to place that in there because there was that connective maternal piece that I was feeling. But as I was going through and writing the story, I knew, because it was so maternal and such a connective piece, that I had to somehow twist it to have it be the very thing that would be a red herring throughout the story, because she is so connected to specifically that experience with her daughter. So
Richard, on to you.
Oh, okay. I'm fascinated on this one. Now we don't do spoilers, which is killing me because I have a question about the interview.
I guess that's for the interview after the interview, Richard.
That'll be the post show interview that we do. But I guess my question would be, did you have an alternate ending in mind at any point, or did you decide this is how this is going to end and we're just going to roll with it?
I had a very much alternate scene again for that 6 years until Adeline decided to take over.
You know, that's what they tend to do. People who are not writers look like we're crazy. We're like, no, we have no control over these people half the time. We're lucky if we even get 30%, okay? But yeah, I was wondering, because it was an ending I did not see coming. Mm-hmm. But the more I thought about it, the more it was like, yeah, I think that's probably the way it needed to end.
Yeah.
So I was just wondering if you had did you have any struggles writing that ending, as far as, because there's a character who obviously is not going to be around at the end. Did you kind of fight with yourself even as you were writing that chapter to go another way?
I did not want this chapter at the end. I cried a lot, actually, as it came in, and I knew that that's exactly where I needed to go. I cried for a little while, because I didn't want it to go there, but I understood why it needed to go there. That was, there was this acceptance piece. I think when you're writing novels, there's always a piece where you're in control, and then there's always a space where you turn over acceptance, that you're no longer in control of this piece. And I definitely, it was a mourning piece that I had to really go into. This is what needs to be done, mourn it a little bit, and then go into acceptance and write what needed to happen.
Yeah, we've all been there. Well, it is that time to take another commercial break. So without further ado, let's hear a little bit about Tuscany Bay Books.
Congratulations, you finally finished that book. Now what are you going to do with it? Well, as a new writer, you probably do what all new writers do, stick it in the drawer with the other six or seven. Well, why not this time do something a little different? Why not get a hold of Black Dog Publishing and our fine imprint of Tuscany Bay Books? See, we can get that book out of the drawer. We can proofread it. We can edit it. We can format it. We can publish it. We can print it. We can copyright it. And we can get it on the shelf so your friends, your neighbors, your relatives, hell, even a person you don't know or two or three might want to buy a copy. It's all what it's about. And all of this for less than the cost of your firstborn. So why not give us a shot? BlackDogPublishing.co, TuscanyBayBooks.com, your answer to getting your book published, and right now we're probably the best at what we do in this industry. Black Dog Publishing, Tuscany Bay Books.
All right, and we are back on the Writer's Block on LA Talk Radio with our guest, Lori Schoenfeld. If you want to talk to her, the phone number is 323-203-0815. You have enough time to get a quick call and a quick question in, so you can do that. And I need to mention that Lori is also a fellow member of the League of Utah Writers. I'm also there. I live in Western Colorado, and our county is praying that Utah would just annex us because the people in Eastern Colorado have lost their minds. But so far, we're still stuck here. But the League graciously allowed me to say, because I can see the state line from my front door, I can join. So we got to come up with a nickname with the acronym for the League people. I'll mention that at the next meeting. We want to talk a little bit about your writing process, as far as, you know, when do you find it's the best time to write? Do you have like a word count? I know every writer has their own little thing that they do. So, what do you find works for you?
I alternate. Sometimes it depends on my mood. So I really just listen to my mood. There are moments where I want a challenge. So setting a word count is like, let's go do it. And then there's other times where I'm like, I want to write for an hour and just see what comes out and not have a word count and just allow myself to be in play, raw expression, whatever needs to happen. So usually it really just depends on my mood. And that also depends on how much of my children I've had each day. Because a lot of times, usually, you know, if my kids are home with all of their beautiful loud noise, it's going to be, I have an hour, I have 2 hours, three, let's just go, let's see what happens, let's create. When my kids aren't here, I'm more like ready for the marathon, like let's hit like 10,000 or 1,000 or whatever that looks like. I've never done 10,000 yet, but you know, there's a challenge that I can play with. But it really just depends on my mood.
Okay, time-wise, not word count-wise, but time-wise, what's the longest marathon session you put in?
Probably about, I've sat down about 3.5 hours, and then I had to get up and do some stuff for at least 15 to 20 minutes. I kind of alternate. So if I start getting really bored at the computer, I know it's a good time for me to go get a drink, walk around the house, go take a walk, go find something to do. And then, you know, 20, 30 minutes later, go ahead and sit back down and restart again.
So tell me about the punching bag.
I asked my husband last year for my birthday, but I wanted a punching bag, and I wanted the punching bag for two reasons. I was going through massive edits in Little Owl, and so there was a lot of raw emotion there, but I was also going through therapy as well and walking through my own journey of like some of the stuff that was not healed yet that I was taking a look at. And so oftentimes I'm like, I've got to get this out somewhere. So we got a punching bag. I turn on my music. I kind of sometimes have a scream session. My family is very aware when this happens. And it helps me to be able to feel the anger and the rage that I'm feeling, but in a way that's healthy and supportive to my journey and what I'm needing to feel, rather than pretending that everything's okay and putting a Band-Aid on it.
Get any strange looks from the neighbors after said screaming session goes off, or did they just kind of they figured it out?
They may have, but I just wave at them anyway and pretend like, you know, there's, you know, just a normal day. It's fine.
And the neighbors are like, what's going on in that house? I need to write a book about those people.
You guys must have fun around Halloween. I can just, I'll just put it that way.
At 9 o'clock at night, right on point. No.
Okay. Now I gotta ask you. In your bio, it says you were a Nancy Drew enthusiast, and I was a library rat when I was in school, and that, but partially because we were moving all over the place all the time. I didn't even bother trying to figure out who I was classmates with. I just went to the library. So I know for a fact I read every Hardy Boys and every Nancy Drew mystery that was ever printed in those little blue books that they came out with that barely fit your hand. So what got you into Nancy Drew? And did that kind of get you on this road to where you like the mysteries and the thrillers and the psychological thrillers?
My grandma actually, for my 8th birthday, gave me my first set. It was the first 4 books. And I remember, actually, it's funny, when she first gave it to me, I was like, what is this? It's old books. I actually remember like that feeling. And then there was a Saturday I was bored, and there on the shelf was my old books. And I took one out and started to read it. And it instantly hooked me that I just went through the 4 within that first few days, and then got on my bike and rode down to the library every single week, hauling like 5 to 10, 15 Nancy Drew, you know, books in my backpack and taking them back home with me. And then once I was done, going back and doing like, cause there's so many books, you know, they have the case files. So I went through every Nancy Drew and Hardy Boy possible that I could get my hands on.
Yeah. I landed in a East Texas town, and the library there had them on a shelf, every one of them. And, you know, I'm a very fast reader, always have been. So I just started, as soon as we moved into this thing, I just started at the one end and worked my way all the way down to the other end. And the librarian is looking at me like, how are you reading this many? Because I could take out 2 or 3 a day. And she's like, you're insane. What do you, go out and play. It's like, no, this is much more fun. So it's nice to run into a fellow person who's read those books and enjoyed them. Do you find yourself maybe working in some of the things that you read, from some of the old stories, like the Nancy Drew or some of the anything else you might have read, and work it into your own stories?
Nancy Drew, I love Nancy. She is so curious. She is always investigating, like, okay, this is what you think happened, but there's another mystery behind the mystery. And so very much so at a young age, I resonated with that a lot of what is the mystery behind the mystery, and have brought that into every piece of writing, that regardless of what genre it is, it's always the question that I ask the characters, what is the mystery behind the mystery?
Yeah, I find myself doing that even with sci-fi, and people are accusing me of, you know, we're going to stop watching your left hand that you're waving at me, because that right hand of yours has always got something going on that is going to sneak up and surprise us. So, and I got that, I think, from the Nancy Drew and the Hardy Boys, because it was always, okay, yeah, this is pretty basic. It's like, oh, well, no, wait a minute. Okay, where did that come from? But it makes sense. So you want to do that as a writer. You want to kind of give them the red herrings, but then you've got to wrap it all up so that everything still makes sense, even though they were kind of going off on the wrong direction on purpose. And that's another thing that's hard to do without just flat out cheating sometimes. And so it's something I noticed in this book, Little Owls, that you did as well. Because like I said, I didn't see the ending coming. I thought this was something that we're going to go a completely different direction, and there we are, and it's like, okay, all right, but it still works. So now there's another thing I wanted to ask before we get to the next commercial in a couple of minutes. You say you're a cyborg, so I got to ask, if it's none of my business, tell me to shut up, but I'm a sci-fi guy, so I run into a cyborg, I want to know.
Yes.
So where did that come from?
I had scoliosis when I was 12, and that's where my spine, instead of being straight, is crooked. Mm-hmm. I wore a Boston brace, which is this huge plastic brace that just snugs you like a girdle, but it's not cute at all, for 22 hours a day for a year and a half to try to squeeze my spine back into place. When that didn't work, at age 15, my only option, because I was so hunched over, was to have massive surgery or to be crippled by 30. And so now I am the proud owner of 2 Harrington rods from the top of my neck all the way down to my tailbone. And there's 18 hooks that are holding my spine in place.
That fits the definition of cyborg. See, I was almost at the beginning. I thought it'd be too cute if I did at the beginning. I was going to say the informally known as the Bionic Woman, but I didn't know how that would go over. So I just figured I'd wait. You know, that would actually be an interesting way to have a murder mystery solved, is have somebody identified by that. You know, it's strange that we think like that. And this is another writer's thing. Everything's fair game for us. And there are no filters. We're going to, if we think it's interesting, it's going in the book. So I guess the other question I have is, you're also into the child abuse awareness. And I sense a little bit of that got into Little Owl. How did you get started into that?
I started first when I was walking through some of my own healing of opening up those layers of PTSD and childhood trauma. I started realizing the things that I thought were normal that were absolutely not normal. And that opened up my whole perspective of, okay, well, if that's not normal, then what in the world is healthy love? Like what is a happy family? Why don't even know what that looks like? And the more that I dove into understanding those pieces, the more I started seeing a lot of other beautiful people that were struggling with very similar things to what I had been struggling with and I'm still struggling with. And, you know, when you hear other people's stories, people reach out to you because they really want, we want connection. We want to be heard. We want to be understood in those experiences. And when I had people reach out to me, it was a very natural thing for me to just say, you know, I want to build some sort of a support group that I can share what has worked for me so far and at least just give them tools to see if it helps support them as we all apply different things differently. But at least a space that's safe where people feel like they can come and be heard, valued, and understood and not being judged by their own experience that they're going through.
And it's not just physical abuse. There's also mental abuse. And you know, I've run into people who have suffered through that, and I've met some people who have dished that out. And it's, you know, it's hard to see when somebody is suffering, especially the mental abuse. And it's good that there are people out there that are trying to reach out to them and kind of help them get through. And I think is your podcast kind of geared toward that?
Mm-hmm. The Enlightenment Podcast is a space for people to come and share their own personal stories and voice. It can be tied to PTSD or trauma, mm-hmm. or it can be tied to just a personal struggle that they've experienced within their own life and how they're working to find that success and triumph and joy moving through those hard pieces as well. Yeah.
Okay, well, it is time for our last commercial break, so let's all kind of catch our breath and get a quick drink of water while we hear about Creative Edge.
Hi, Jim Christina here for Creative Edge Publicity. And you know, there's a reason that authors flock to Creative Edge. Yes, it's true, and no one would believe it, but it is true. Creative Edge, the grassroots publicity firm that has stayed community-minded, is growing. And not only growing, but busting right out of their seams. With a client base of over 70 authors, 2 New York Times bestsellers, 6 USA Today bestsellers, and multiple international bestsellers and award winners, Creative Edge in 4 years has become one of the mainstays in the publicity book market, offering reader-focused opportunities in all levels of media, including podcasts, radio, TV, print, and much more. When it comes to publicity, Mickey Mickelson and Creative Edge are experts in the book industry. Look him up at www.creative-edge.services. Creative Edge, it's your brand, your future.
Okay, and we are back here on the Writer's Block on LA Talk Radio. And real quick, Creative Edge has a brand new website, and next week we will have a brand new ad that will have the website. So if you're looking for Creative Edge, it is creativeedgepublicity.com, and that will get you to the site. Creative Edge is also represents Tuscany Bay Books, which means they represent me, they represent Jim, and they represent our guest. Big, happy Creative Edge family. There we go. We'll go with that for right now. You know, we are less than 4 minutes away from the show. So just real quick, you kind of left the door open for a second book. So is a second book coming? And what are you working on right now?
There is a second book coming tied to Little Al. I'm also working on some realistic fiction stories, specifically about a girl who wants to sing on Broadway. That's her dream. But then she loses her voice permanently and is trying to figure out how to either let go of her dream or to find herself still being on stage, just in a completely different way than what she had imagined.
Make sure you get in touch with the bookie and get back on here when that one comes out, because we'll want to talk to you about that one. We're coming up toward the end. Why don't you let us know where we can find you online and how a reader can get a hold of you and to let you know what they thought about the book.
Perfect. You can find me at larryschoenfeld.com and anywhere under Larry Schoenfeld, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. I love questions, comments. If you have any comments or questions about PTSD or the characters, please reach out if there's something that is really speaking to you and you'd like to understand within them. You know, there's always support here.
Right. Bobby, did you have anything? One last question.
If you were to write a spinoff about one of the side characters in this book, who would you pick?
Ooh.
A good one.
Oh, we're going to run out of time.
No, we're good.
Oh, my goodness. My first initial answer was going to be Officer Abbott. So we'll go with that. But Dr. Linchester was a close second.
Officer Abbott. I'm leaning toward Officer Abbott.
Yeah, he's got a story. He's got more story.
Okay, we are up against the clock. We got about 50 seconds left, and I got to let you know. First, we want to thank Lori for being on the show tonight. We got to have you back on. You were great, and it was fun talking to you about Little Owl. So get on Amazon and get a copy of this book. If you're into psychological thrillers, you'll enjoy it. Next week, we have a former FBI agent on the show. She has written a book called It's Not About the Gun. And as we Western writers know, oh, yes, it is about the gun. But we'll find out what she'll be on with Jim and Bob.
You're listening to Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Richard Polinelli, only on LA Talk Radio.
chasing every beam of sunlight. We're running.